Accession number 31054, Reel 5.
Mr. Walter Foster, Reel 5. So, could I ask you now about your arrival in what was Australia and the subsequent movements that you had there?
Yes. After 8 weeks on the De Niro. We reached Sydney Harbour. Having left the German seamen and the Italians at Melbourne. We German and Austrian refugees went on to Sydney, and when we inquired where we were actually going, or you're going to a camp near Sydney, having disembarked, we were taken to a railway train, and the train travelled for 24 hours into the sunset. To a place called Hay. Near Sydney was 500 miles near. And we travelled through what the Australians are pleased to call the bush. Everybody else would call the desert. When we arrived at Hay, we asked, "So what are you going to do with us?" And the Australians said, "Here we have built a fence, or two fences, round two. The two pieces of land fenced off. Inside that fence, this is a bit of England, and you are the problem of the English government. You're not our problem." And they realized that we were a problem. And they saw the state that our suitcases were in, having been ripped open and pilfered.
Were they friendlier to you than the British soldiers had been?
Much friendlier, yes. The Australian soldiers who guarded us were all elderly men, mainly survivors of the Gallipoli campaign of 1915. And it all looked like an early day Wild West film. And they were the sort of sun-tanned Wild West types. And in Hay, which was the place where we left our train, it hadn't rained for 18 months. And the ground was ankle-deep sand, absolutely dry.
What was inside this wire, this area which was the British problem? Were there buildings?
There were army camp huts. Each hut for 20 odd, or perhaps 30 men, with bunks. And the huts had no window glass. Just a gap between the wall and the roof for ventilation. And later, as we learned, for the wind to blow through, but the wind was heavy with sand. So when there was a sandstorm, the sand all came into the huts. Daytime temperatures of 100 degrees and nighttime frost took some getting used to. And we learned that you can make tea by letting the sun warm the water. And we also learned that you never, when it's hot, you never drink cold water. You drink hot tea.
How quickly did you organize yourselves in Hay Camp? You were saying about the activities and system on the Isle of Man.
But by the time we got to Hay, we were used to organizing universities. And that was done very quickly. And we had a camp shop, but no money, of course.
How about the cooking? What was, you know, the system there?
Well, there were army cookhouses. We had to do all the work ourselves. There was never any lack of volunteers to work in the kitchen, because it meant that you could eat more food.
Did you have enough to eat?
Plenty to eat. The Australia is and was then a land of plenty. The Australians gave us plenty of food and endless food supplies. You only had to ask and you could have it. In mainly mutton. But also lots of canned food, no fresh food, but lots of canned food.
Bearing in mind you had been robbed by these British Army soldiers,
yes,
was anything done in Australia to redress yes. your complaints?
Well, the Australians, they had a commission investigating what has happened, and they passed the information back to England. And the result was that a long time later, after the war, the colonel who commanded the soldiers on the Donera and some of his officers were court-martialed.
Did you get any compensation there?
No. We just got the satisfaction that to know that they got lengthy prison sentences, all of them. There was no compensation. But they gave us essentials like shirts and socks were given to us. I mean, of Australian Army stocks.
Did you ever meet any of the local people? Did they come into the camp, or were you allowed into the vicinity?
No, there was the small town of Hay. There was no contact.
How were you getting news of what was going on in the war? Because I imagine now, you know, with time going on, would you have been there at the time of Pearl Harbor?
Not yet. Much later.
Much later, yes.
I mean, again, the main problem was the length of time we were. The camp song, the first year is the worst year to get used to it. That was summed it up. We were concerned, how can we get released? Can we get released in Australia? Or can we go back to England?
Yes, I can imagine it must have been extremely frustrating, because I expect you wanted to get into the war, didn't
yes.
you, and do something.
We felt very strongly that the war was our war, and we wanted to do something towards it. So it was said, well, you can join the British Army, but only the Pioneer Corps.
And how did you react to that?
Well, it wasn't very tempting.
What did you know about the Pioneer Corps? Why weren't you tempted?
Well, we knew that the Pioneer Corps was employed mainly on navvying jobs. the only weapon you got in the pioneer corps was a shovel.
And that was the only way out, was it, the pioneer corps?
That or having important friends in England.
Were there many who got out that way, do you know? People who had contacts in England?
Yes. Not very many, but a couple of dozen, perhaps. There was one lot that went back to England. But they were unlucky. Their boat got sunk. And I don't think there were any survivors. That was a group of about 15 or 20.
What was special about them? Did they have special skills that the British government wanted?
It was probably more that they had special friends who could use influence on their behalf.
You decided to join the Pioneer Corps, I believe. What finally decided you?
The fact that I didn't get used to it, whatever the camp song said, and it was long, too long.
Was it a fairly straightforward process, joining the Pioneer Corps?
Well, while I was in Australia, there was a liaison officer sent out from England, Major Layton, and he had papers that one could sign. And when I got too fed up with being there and doing nothing, I went to him and said, okay, I'll sign. So I signed. But then we weren't sent back to England straight away, but I was sent to yet another camp, a place called Liverpool outside Sydney. And while I was in Liverpool, waiting to be sent back to England, Pearl Harbor happened. And when they finally decided the time has come to send us back to the Pioneer Corps, it was not a good time to travel because nobody knew where the Japanese fleet was. So the Australians found us a boat called the Largs Bay. Which was a merchant ship on which they had stuck a couple of naval guns. We called it a merchant cruiser. And they gave us an escort of two cruisers to take us from Sydney Harbour to Auckland, New Zealand. And from there they decided it was the business of the New Zealanders. And the New Zealanders didn't have two cruisers to give us as an escort. So they sent us alone, all by ourselves, across the South Pacific. We went to the South American coast and then crept up the South American coast to Panama. And we went through Panama, through the canal. And then, and that was very interesting.
Yes, you were having quite a voyage, really, weren't you, one way or another?
We saw quite a lot. And from the Panama Canal, went to Curacao, from Curacao to Bermuda, and from Bermuda, we finally went to Canada, so I got to Canada after all. Our ship waited in the port of Halifax. We waited for a convoy to take us across the Atlantic.
Quite a journey.
Yes. I've never been so cold before or since as I was in the port of Halifax. We were 10 days lying. The ship had its engines shut off, so it was no heat. The heating on the ship is a byproduct of the engines being on.
Were you cheered, though, by the fact that America was in the war?
Very much so. So in the port of Halifax, we waited for a convoy. The convoy never materialized. So they decided to take us, not because of me, but because of also on the boat were the crew of a Norwegian whaling ship and an Australian naval crew for a destroyer that was being built in England for the Australian Navy. They were going to England to take the destroyer back to Australia. And also on the lugs was the last load of tin from Malaya, important for the war. So they decided to take us and another ship, a Dutch liner called the Volendam, which had on board the 1st Division of American troops to come to England. Well, we had all this information, and clearly the German Navy also had the information, because they concentrated their U-boats on us. And we had an escort of two destroyers, just two ships, us and the Volendam, and two destroyers were a fast convoy to make a dash across the Atlantic. That was at the height of the U-boat war. And that was the nearest that I came to shooting war.
I bet you saw a few sights, didn't you? That must have been a very dangerous voyage.
Yes. Very noisy. Some of the explosions were torpedoes, others were depth charges. But
the Volendam was sunk later. Did you know that?
No, I don't. I didn't
yes,
know
it
that.
Was hit taking children, I think. The other way.
Back from Canada?
No, from Britain to Canada.
Was it?
Yes. Yes. So, arriving in Britain, you were now going to be recruited into the Pioneer Corps.
Arriving in Britain, the army had lost my papers that I had signed. So to make sure that it shouldn't be too easy, they sent me back to the Isle of Man to intern me again. And on the Isle of Man, I had to go through the whole procedure of joining the Pioneer Corps again. By the time they'd sorted that out, which only took them about 3 or 4 weeks. But finally they had all the papers in order. So they sent me to the Pioneer Corps training camp, which, you won't believe it, was in the same place, Hyten, which had served as an internment camp for me several months earlier, or a couple of years earlier. And after my experience of cold in Halifax, and having come from the tropics, I got serious bronchitis and was bad enough to go to hospital. The army in Hyten, their hospital was a military emergency hospital, which had been established at Rain Hill in what was locally known as the local loony bin. I remember going in my hospital blues, the sort of uniform they gave us, pyjama-like uniform they gave us, gave soldiers in hospital. I went in my hospital blues into the nearest town, St. Helens, and went into a barber's to have had a haircut. And the barber, being friendly, asked me, "And where are you, soldier?" Seeing my hospital blues, said, "I'm at Rain Hill." He says, "Don't worry, son. I was shell shocked in the First War. Because Rain Hill was known as the mental institution." Then, when I'd finished my training in the Pioneer Corps, the training consisted only of square bashing. learning to stand to attention and